George Morris, feature writer for The Advocate and longtime sports writer for The Advocate as well. Going back to 1982, he was writing in Baton Rouge for the Old State Times. And before we get to Mike Royko and other matters, it's hard to believe, George, I've known you for almost 35 years.
Yeah, we do go way back. We have we went to many a sports press conference and post game locker room back in the day. I'll have been here 35 years in September.
Well, 35 years ago, the coach at LSU was Jerry Lane Stovall, who will be 76 on Sunday. It's hard to believe that was half a lifetime ago that he was hired at LSU, and you and I covered him from almost start to finish at Tiger Town. But those were great years, and they were great years for the State Times. We heard Rick Kogan earlier talking about the demise of newspapers. It's hard to believe that at one time, not so long ago, Baton Rouge had two thriving newspapers on the same day in the same place.
Well, that's true, and it was fun. It was fun from the standpoint that even though we worked for the same parent company, we were competitors. We wanted to do better than The Advocate, and often we did, and often they licked us. But it was fun to go into a post game knowing that The Advocate was going to have the first bite of the apple in terms of what they were going to write, the quotes they were going to use, the points they were going to make, but to go in there trying to figure out, okay, how can I have a story that will still be really something that they didn't get, and so that kind of competitiveness, I think, made both of us better.
Well, in the old days, George would have been penning a column about Leonard Fournette going number 4 in the draft in the first round to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Jamal Adams going number 6 to the New York Jets, two LSU players selected in the first 6 picks of the draft. But now George largely writes features, many of which are about World War II. He's probably the foremost writer about World War II in the country right now. He is certainly keeping an important flame alive. But you and I, we never knew the man, but we both owe a debt of gratitude to one Mike Royko.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I remember I had an internship at the old Tampa Times, another afternoon paper that bit the dust, which is why I'm here, but I digress. and in 76, I would be the first person in at 3:30 in the morning to select the wire stories that would be in that day's paper. And this was an era where we had made the transition into computers. Some of the wire services, such as the Chicago Daily News Sun-Times, for which he wrote at the time, still came in on teletype. And so there would be one copy of Mike Royko's story available. And it was always amusing to watch. Of course, I would get the first crack at it because I would actually literally pull it off the wire. But to see how people would actually almost fight to get to read his column before it got in the newspaper.
Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was, certainly your previous guest, Rick, said it really well. He was unique. He had a very funny, interesting, vivid perspective on everything. And even if you didn't agree with him, it was one of those things that he presented what he had to say in such a way that you were compelled to read it. And I think in particular, we're living in a time now where a lot of people using the internet and Twitter and various feeds, they're sort of selecting sources that agree with their predisposition politically or otherwise, and they're not listening to other voices. Of course, he was from a day where you had limited media outlets. As everyone read Royko, and like you said, some of people would crumple up the paper and throw it across the train car because they were so mad at him, mm-hmm. but they could not help but read him.
Yeah, and he wrote from no political slant. He slammed everybody, and everybody was fair game. I remember when Bill Clinton became president, he released his tax returns, and it showed that through the years he had given his used underwear to the Salvation Army and had taken a $4 tax credit on each pair of used underwear. You can imagine. You can look it up online, what Royko did with that. He sliced and diced the president like nobody could.
You're right. I mean, and Roy Kowak, I mean, I think he was a fairly, you know, he was a fairly conventional Democratic liberal in terms of his mindset, but he would not hold back. You know, hitting a fellow Democrat, he was a equal opportunity needler when it came to things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Louisiana, we have a history of legendary characters, and it all began for us as a state, April 30th, 1812, the 18th state. So, are you going to be celebrating the great historian that you've become, George, the 205th anniversary of the great state of Louisiana Sunday? Is there a big powwow at the Morris House?
Yes, our bicentennial plus five soiree is not to be missed.
Can't miss. You got to be there, right? Well, it was 205 years ago that Louisiana became a state. And my friend Oscar Richard's the one who knew all these dates. He noted that 91... the late, great Oscar Richard, who was public relations director at LSU, 91 years ago, 1826, LSU moved to its current campus in 1926. So that has been a while. There are very few people who are alive, but some are. And soon, this is something to keep in mind, we're probably going to have somebody who was there in 1926. But April 30th, 1926, LSU moved to its current campus. And none other than James Carville wants to name the parade grounds after William Tecumseh Sherman. How far do you think you'll get with that?
I think James Carville delights in just occasionally poking his finger, metaphorically speaking, into other people's metaphorical eyes. You know, I don't think that there is going to be a groundswell of, oh, my goodness, we have just done wrong by not honoring William Tecumseh Sherman. Now, I don't have a problem, personally, I don't have a problem with doing it, but it's like, is anyone really out there genuinely upset that Tecumseh Sherman was not,
not honored by LSU? Roy Kowak-esque line from Carville saying that Sherman was the inventor of modern warfare.
Well, certainly he... that's an interesting. I mean, I don't know that I'd want to study that a little bit more before I really tried to.
I think that was firm tongue firmly yes. planted. But 18, April 30th, Sunday, you write about World War II. It was 1945 that Adolf Hitler killed himself on April 30th. And Oscar Richard, the guy who gave me all this April 30th information, he was freed from a German prison camp the same day that Hitler committed suicide. That essentially was the end of the war in Europe. That was the final straw, but it went on for a little while afterward. But that's a day that few people acknowledge.
Well, of course, because the actual surrender... and of course, the Soviet Union and the other allies recognized different dates, but the 7th and the 8th of May as being the actual surrender kind of supplanted that. Certainly, Germany was collapsing at the time. It was only a matter of time, at that point. But when you think back on just how much destruction, how much death, how much misery, how much suffering over such a wide geographic area. It's one of those things that I'm fascinated by World War II, but you cannot, you know, have a soul and not still be just horrified to think of what happened and how useless and worthless it all was.
You probably didn't think about it when you were in your career early, but this may very well be your legacy. All those stories you've done about World War II veterans, I know you take great pride in it, and some of these guys are no longer with us. A lot of them are.
Most of them aren't. And that's one of the things that I'm glad I got to, you know, to get their stories told and written. And now, of course, I have a website, www.thebigone.com, where I'm republishing them so that people can have access to this, because there are a lot of great histories of the war. But to me, the personal accounts, I mean, I started doing this not knowing in 1992 that there was going to be a World War II museum in which they were going to be collecting all these oral histories, and they've just done a fantastic amazing job of creating this these oral histories. But the little picture, the things that guys went through on their ship, on the landing craft, you know, slogging through trenches or trying to, you know, wrestle the Japanese out of the caves at Iwo Jima and Okinawa and Peleliu and places like this. They were just compelling. They were just there was human, there was courage, there was cowardice, there was sacrificial actions that they had toward one another. There was just the pain of loss. There's just incredibly human suffering. I'm sorry, incredible human stories that came out of that, and to be able to tell that and sort of honor that generation of people by letting their voices, you know, be heard is something that I don't know if I'll be remembered at all, but it's something that I'm glad for myself that I got to do because I think it was worth doing.
The website again?
www.thebigone.com.
From George Morris. It's trite to say, but Tom Brokaw wrote a book about it. It was the greatest generation.
Well, certainly in terms of, I mean, how the impact that that they had, the sacrifices they went through. And, you know, I mean, I think we have great people now, but they had gone through the crucible of the Depression, and they just made incredible sacrifices for which the world is much better.
Well, thank you, George Morris. Keep up the great work at The Advocate.